Welcome to Chatting About Change with Dr. Jim Maddox. I'm a professor, OD consultant, and change strategist, helping individuals and organizations experience life to the fullest and engaging in positive transformational change. In addition to this podcast, please check out my latest book, Embracing Resistance to Change, Facilitating Change Differently Through the Paradox of Resistance, available now through Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of Chatting About Change with Dr. Jim Maddox. Today I'm visiting with Tony Martin, who is a former student of mine from Kansas, who got his master's degree in organization development. And so Tony and I have been catching up through LinkedIn, and he is currently a people analytics consultant, which I think is a fascinating title. So Tony, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this, a people analytics consultant. I think it's, you've shared some with me, but I just think my listeners will kind of find it an interesting aspect of our field.
I'm still trying to figure it out myself. So I still have a difficult time explaining to my parents what exactly it is that I do for a living. So no, it's essentially, I got into people analytics through basically through my interest in people data. So right before I started grad school, I used to work in social work. And one of the things that prompted me into kind of a career pivot or different interest was my experience working in mental health. Originally, I was planning on pursuing my education in clinical psychology and eventually going on to become a therapist. But after working in social services, I worked briefly as a children's case manager. And maybe a month into the job, my supervisor pulled me to the side and said that the average turnover for a children's case manager was around 6 months. And I think I just had one of those aha light bulb moments where I'm thinking to myself, how can we provide, you know, with our mental health system, how can we provide quality mental health treatment if kiddos and families are consistently getting new workers, especially if trust and rapport is one of the most important components of therapeutic relationship? Kind of difficult to maintain that if you're getting a new worker every 6 months. So that's when my career interest shifted more towards examining people and the workforce and just a lot of the issues that kind of surround it, such as employee engagement, turnover, employee burnout, just a lot of issues that employees experience in the workplace, especially since, you know, we spend most of our adult lives working. So why not examine what type of work environments are the most conducive to providing a positive environment for people to be happy while they enjoy their professional lives. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I've come across a number of people that started their careers in a therapy or counseling type role, and then find themselves in a training development or development role, and, you know, consulting role. And I've had friends that are therapists tell me, oh, it sounds like what you do is kind of therapy, but for organizations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a, you know, it's a good analogy. So talk a little bit about what are some of the, how do you use some of the analytics that you have access to, or what are some of the ways that that you just use the data that's available to you or that you seek out?
Definitely. So I got into people analytics primarily through one primary area, which was workforce planning. So when I joined Spirit AeroSystems, I joined as a workforce planning and people analytics analyst. So I spent a lot of time with HR data, looking at headcount, learning some of the industry standards in regards to how do you calculate attrition? What does attrition look like? But then really started to kind of take it a step further, where I think people analytics can get a bad rap because a lot of organizations that I've come across are stuck or can sometimes get stuck in the very beginning stages of trying to build up an analytics program. where everything is just kind of descriptive, right? And you're just essentially reporting the news. For example, I had an excellent conversation with a colleague in regards to some of the metrics that we use and how we use those metrics, attrition being one of them. So this one person had a lot of questions revolving around, you know, what does attrition look like? You know, why are people leaving my company? Using that information, it's one thing to report, you know, people are leaving, but then it's another, why are they leaving? And also with the amount of people that are leaving my organization, is that number high? Is it low? So you really start kind of doing, you know, you start getting more questions about industry benchmarks and comparing with your peers. When it kind of goes back to the basic question is, well, what does healthy look like? So if people are leaving, you know, attrition is completely, you know, based off of context. If you have an organization that has very little turnover and not a lot of internal movement within the organization, you can start seeing attrition start to peak up because people have nowhere to move, have nowhere to grow. And attrition can also have a domino effect where if different pockets within an organization start experiencing turnover and high rates, then it kind of gets people nervous and you start seeing a little bit more and it kind of builds momentum. So
it's like, it's contagious.
So I got started with people analytics primarily from a workforce planning side. So really understanding not only the people data and what's going on, but really working with stakeholders and with the business to determine, well, here's what the data says, but let me learn a little bit more about the business context. Are we developing any new products? Are we launching anything? Are we increasing production? Are, you know, what's going on within the business? And then we can kind of start working backwards to say, you know, what does the data tell us? Are there any red flags that are coming up? And then we can start engaging in conversations with, okay, how does senior leadership want to address some of these challenges?
Yeah, I think it's you point out, and I think this goes back to your social work background and your kind of your people skills, but that idea of being able to ask those meaningful questions to be able to probe and find out rather than just being a number cruncher, really kind of like understanding the organization, understanding what the needs are. So I think that's kind of a fascinating aspect that you bring to it that I think is probably missing in some organizations that do, you know, a lot of number crunching, a lot of business analytics. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of that's a part of like a pure business analytics type degree, the type of skills that you bring to that. So talk a little bit more about that idea, because I know being in your new role in transitioning to that, with a new organization during a pandemic where you really, I think one of your strengths and what you thrive on is relationships and rapport. How have you been able to do that? Or how do you do that in a virtual world or when you've got people, everybody's remote?
I'm still learning that. So I actually started with my current company after the pandemic. So I've only been with my current employer for the last couple of months now, and it's definitely been an interesting experience. During the pandemic, when I worked for Spirit AeroSystems, we underwent a lot of changes under a short amount of time and when the pandemic hit, there was a lot of workforce actions due to not only production pauses on 737 MAX, but also, you know, when the pandemic hit and the global economy essentially shut down and people were no longer allowed to travel, demand shriveled up. So when I joined Spirit, it was before the pandemic. And so when we went to a remote environment, when we were forced to because of the pandemic, it wasn't as difficult for me because a lot of those relationships were already established and it was just, you know, doing what you did in the office, only you're doing it at home now, which comes with its own complexities, depending on whatever point you're at in your life, whether you're single, you're in a relationship, you're married, if you've got children, young children versus older children. I think 2020, needless to say, was a very, very interesting time collectively for us. But fast forward to today, it's been very interesting onboarding in a 100% remote context. And so I think for people that are going to thrive in those types of roles, it really requires you to be comfortable with forcing yourself out of your shell. Some of the feedback that I've received so far is right now in a lot of meetings and stuff, I'm kind of quiet because I'm kind of taking everything in, getting kind of a lay of the land, feeling things out. One of my favorite proverbs is, you know, how can you enjoy my tea if you don't first empty your cup? And so going into a new organization, no matter how much experience, whether you're fresh out of school or if you've got 20, 30 years in the workforce, when you're entering in a new environment, you come into an organization with a lot of preconceived notions and assumptions about how things should be done, how things work. And oftentimes you can find yourself butting heads with other folks when you're getting introduced to a new work culture. And so that has definitely been an interesting experience working in a 100% remote context. Because it's really easy for people to misinterpret, I guess, kind of mindfulness, you know, quiet mindfulness, you know, taking everything in with, you know, not being assertive, not speaking up. And I think it's kind of reflective of how society has a tendency to value extroverted personality traits more than introversion.
Yeah, particularly in the West.
Yeah. And so working in a 100% remote environment, I think it completely depends on the type of role that you're in. If you're in a highly technical role where you're spending your time behind a computer crunching numbers all day, where you have very little interaction with customers or stakeholders, if you have a clear understanding of your task and your goals, it's an excellent setting. I think it's a little bit more challenging for remote roles that are more customer facing. But it's not impossible, but I think it requires, depending on whatever your personality type is, it requires you to kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit more and be taking a little bit more initiative and assertiveness when it comes to reaching out to stakeholders. But I mean, as a consultant, I even hate the word consultant because when I'm engaging with a stakeholder and having a conversation, that's exactly what I want it to be, is a conversation. I don't want to come in and be seen as an expert or be treated as an expert. Like, what should I do? What, you know, this and that, because oftentimes a lot of stakeholders, especially when you're working with data, a lot of organizations are striving to be data driven. And there are a lot of organizations out there that are truly data driven organizations. But then you have others that say that they're data driven, but are still very, a lot of decision-making is based off of intuition and experience. And then you're going to get the data to either support the decision or realize that whatever.
Make the decision and then find data to back you up.
So, and I think that's just a combination of just organizational culture in terms of whether or not we let the numbers lead our decision-making versus we let the data support whatever decision, you know, whatever gut feeling that we feel is right to make a move on. But there are times where organizations really need to take a step back and think, okay, in today's day and age, we are producing not only with our employees and with people, we're producing an enormous amount of data. And a lot of organizations are realizing that we're sitting on mountains of data. And there's a huge appetite for trying to derive insights from data. But at the end of the day, you're still making decisions that impact people. And so trying to find that balance between the analytics and also engaging stakeholders and having conversations as far as, you know, what's driving the question for this need for data. And I think a lot of organizations get stuck in the first stage of, you know, we're describing what's going on, how do we evolve and get to the next step of.
Yeah, it almost looks like you're moving from just quantitative data to qualitative data.
It's definitely a mix of back and forth, because I mean, it also depends on the stakeholder that you're working with, right? Some people are very, very numbers driven and they look at a chart, they look at a graph and it automatically makes sense. Other people, you really need to work with them a little bit and tell them a story. And depending on what level of organization that you're working with, it depends on who you're, you know, if you're working with other individual contributors or other analysts versus high level executives that might not necessarily have the time to dig into all these charts or graphs. Like, just give me the, you know, I mean, they call it an executive summary for a reason, right? Give me the highlights.
Yeah. So how, so is your role, what's the reporting structure like for your role as a analytics consultant? Are you part of HR or we're kind of?
Yeah. So our team is relatively new. The team's been around for about a year and a half, 2 years, and I joined just 3 months ago. Completely brand new team. Some employees are previous and were current employees, and then another large number of the team were completely brand new to the organization as well. It is a people analytics function. It is a team, but it does report up through HR. But we have different stakeholders throughout the business, either different business functions that we support as our stakeholders, or I support internally like our HR function. So what's going on within HR, whereas other PA consultants support maybe more the operations and business side.
How is it? Because you've done this kind of a similar role in two different organizations, two vastly different industries. How would you compare and contrast that in terms of your professional field across two different organizational cultures?
I think a lot gets underestimated in regards to investment in data infrastructure. So when it comes to trying to build an analytics team or an analytics function, it kind of begins and ends with the data at the end of the day. And with people analytics, not only you're dealing with HR data, but sometimes you're dealing with other people data that comes from other systems or different areas, even within HR. So you might have, you know, employee data in regards to their, you know, their job details, job code, job level. Then you start kind of digging into learning and development information, talent acquisition data, and not all of this data, depending on how an organization sets up its data infrastructure, not all this data is stored within the same system. And so one of the unglamorous parts of people analytics or any kind of data science job is 90% of your job is moving data around, moving it from one system to another. Because without good, clean data pipelines, any kind of analytics initiatives that you try to, or projects that you try to engage in, won't get off the ground. Or if they do, depending on what state the organization's data is in, they're not going to be insightful. And I think one of the biggest challenges for analytics teams is the expectation of immediate ROI. Like, I want results, I want insights right off the bat. But if an organization hasn't taken the time to invest in its data infrastructure from the beginning before it can start getting to the fun, cool, prescriptive analytics piece, then I think a lot of teams and a lot of organizations can get frustrated. Teams get frustrated because of infrastructure. Senior leadership gets frustrated because they're not seeing results, and you can sometimes fall into the trap of spinning your wheels.
What would you say are kind of the And maybe there aren't any, but what would you say are kind of some of the current hot metrics that leadership is really mainly focused on or wants to know? What are some of those key metrics?
I think it varies. Like anything, like any industry and like any field, there are trends that come and go. And it also is going to depend on the size and scale of your organization. So an organization that has 5 employee, you know, small business owners, there's not going to be a need for a people analytics function. There's just, and then with larger organizations, depending on whether or not an organization is domestic or if it has a presence in multiple countries, you start kind of entering into data privacy laws. Different countries have different requirements in regards to how employee data is treated in privacy, which is excellent from a employee perspective. And even for myself, you know, I want my information to be, you know, be used responsibly, and I don't want just everybody knowing my information. But at the same time, some of those restrictions can sometimes make it challenging when it comes to trying to do analytics, because you're trying to navigate a lot of these political and legal issues while trying to provide insights with people data.
Yeah. And that's, you had mentioned earlier that one of your counterparts that you got to hang out with at the headquarters was from another country. Mm-hmm. So that adds just another layer of complexity to your role, that international piece. What do you see as kind of the future of the field? Where is it going?
I think what I find interesting is what people are doing with machine learning and artificial intelligence. Because at the end of the day, people are trying to find it. It's not just about the data. Data is the beginning and the end, but at the end of the day, it's really about storytelling, right? And evolving beyond the descriptive stage to more prescriptive and predict, not well, predictive. So understanding, like going back to attrition, understanding what variables, you know, have a significant relationship or a high correlation to, you know, a person leaving their job, to where you can start kind of predicting, you know, who are my high risk populations, who's at high risk, but then evolving to prescriptive. And I think what machine learning and AI is very, very fascinating, especially with a lot of the news articles that people have been reading about chatbot. I don't know if you've looked into that, where you've got, you know, AI that is, you know, you've got, you know, I mean, you're a teacher. Does AI scare professors and thinking that students?
I saw something yesterday and it was humorous, but it said that the ultimate insult to humans is when a computer makes you verify that you're not a robot.
So I think that machine learning and AI are very interesting when it comes to people analytics, and getting to the point where we're prescribing things to do. But I think those are interesting areas to look at, but at the same time, they all still heavily rely on, you know, human, you know, trained models, right, by humans. And one of the things that we have to be wary of is building in, you know, assumptions into some of our predictive models.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look at some of the history of different inventions and the perceived impact that when the printing press was becoming widespread and people were having access to books and written knowledge, people were like, oh, people are going to stop talking. They're not going to, they'll shut themselves off. Which is kind of, you've heard the same story now with like, oh, with technology, people aren't going to really interact because they can just do it all behind a screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that doesn't necessarily prove to be the case. I mean, I remember when online banking was first becoming a thing, that was going to, you were going to see the death of physical banks, and physical banks exploded because more people had access to having a banking account. And so, you know, they thought, oh, bank tellers are going to, that job's going to go away because of ATMs and online banking. And there's actually more teller jobs now than there was, you know, before that, because just the number of banks. Now, jobs do go away, but I think it's just interesting sometimes the prediction of what the impact is going to be isn't always obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, when it comes to AI, I think there's going to be a certain population of people that are afraid of getting their jobs being replaced, which, you know, very well could happen. But also AI being more of an enhancement for a person, right? I think there was an article that I read the other day that was talking about how chatbot can write nearly perfect code. And you've got one camp of people that are, you know, programmers that are worried that, well, computers writing basic code, you know, am I going to be out of a job? Whereas you've got another camp of folks that say, this is awesome, because rather than trying to debug code or trying to figure out problems or flaws in my own code, I can use this as a tool to help me speed things up rather than go through line by line, you know, bad code. So, and I mean, as far as what the future that I see for people analytics, I think that there's going to be with some of the, kind of tying it all together between machine learning and AI and you know, training computer models to make decisions about people. I think some other areas that are going to be very, very popular goes to ethics and governance and security. Just because you have access to certain data doesn't necessarily, and you can analyze it, doesn't necessarily mean that you should, or that you should do anything with it. Diversity and inclusion, being in people analytics, and that's an area that I look at when I look at employee demographic information. But depending on what information you derive from employee demographic info, like, what kind of decision is that going to inform? So
how much of the data that you're gathering or seeking or trying to get more information from stakeholders, how much of it is organizational specific? How much of it's kind of industry more specific? And then how much of it is just more broadly in terms of just organizations in general? Do you look at it at all three levels, or is it primarily your company and the industry?
I think it depends. So some industries are easier to do benchmark comparisons against others. Some are so huge in scale or have such diverse lines of business that it makes any kind of peer-to-peer comparison kind of moot. And so then the question is, okay, then how do we know, you know, how do we know if we're on the right track, if we're doing things? I think that in regards to the data that I have access to, I do have access to some business data and financial data, but I primarily work with HR and people data, L&D data, employee data, talent acquisition data, DEI, demographic information. In my previous role, data analytics team that I was on, we work with both. I work primarily with people data, but I also work with business data as well. And I think that boils down to knowing what the question is, because not every, I mean, I think when it comes to trying to approach a problem, sometimes the knee-jerk response is we need to start gathering information, you know, we need to start getting this data, we need to get this and that. And then you end up finding yourself at a point where it's information overload. And so now you're going back down to, it's like trying to sculpt a statue, right? It's like taking a bunch of clay and compounding it together and then trying to peel back. As opposed to taking the time to really understand what is the business problem that we are trying to solve. And so sometimes that involves people data. Sometimes it involves organizational data. It just depends. And I think in today's day and age, with just the rapid pace of change that organizations are experiencing, sometimes it's hard to keep track in regards to maintaining good and clean data when there's a lot of organizational change going on.
Yeah, doing that in a changing dynamic environments just makes your job fun, right?
Yeah, it's like trying to hit a moving target while you're in a speeding car. So,
yeah. So what advice would you give somebody that was thinking about getting into the people analytics field?
Well, I've seen people from all walks of life kind of get into people analytics. I mean, my formal education is in psychology and organizational development. So I didn't have a very heavy technical education in regards to, I had stats as an undergrad, but I took kind of the initiative to kind of beef up my quantitative skills by volunteering at my alma mater, where I got my undergraduate, before kind of getting into the field. It's not really advice that I would give for anybody specifically for people analytics, but any kind of analytics background. I had one it's funny you say that because it reminds me of a conversation I had with one coworker who had a pure computer science background, brilliant with data. And the conversation kind of went along the lines of like, I don't really care about the data. Like data is just data to me. Like I build things. We got into kind of a philosophic debate because one of the reasons why what led me to people analytics and people data was because of my interest in people and data. And that's kind of what sustains me. Because as I mentioned earlier, 90% of the job is moving data around and trying to solve technical problems. But at the end of the day, like how is this information going to serve leadership, or how is this information going to enable workforce to have a better understanding of, you know, workforce behaviors? Are employees engaged? Are they experiencing burnout? Depending on some of the behaviors that workforce is exhibiting, are you seeing those kind of variables play out in attrition or absenteeism? So I think my biggest piece of advice for anybody getting into the field is just, regardless of whether it's people analytics, find something that supports your passion. Instead of asking the question, what do you want to do when you grow up? Ask what type of problems you like to solve, what kind of problems engage you that kind of get you to think, and then kind of reverse engineer and kind of work your way backwards. I like working with people. I like having those types of conversations, understanding the touchy-feely side of the workforce, the workplace. But at the same time, I also understand that not everybody speaks that language, right? And sometimes leadership kind of shies away from the touchy-feely soft skills. I want hard data. I'm very quantitative. I'm very analytical. I want to see the numbers. And so that's what led me to this field, is the looking at the data, but also having those real human conversations and just kind of combining the two, and just come into it with an open mind and just curiosity.
Yeah, I think that, you talked about your psychology background. I think when people talk about, well, what are the helping professions? And I think a lot of roles can be very much a helping profession in terms of it's a mindset of how you approach your work. And mm-hmm. So like the how you use inquiry, and you ask a lot of questions, and you you try to kind of find out what it is that they're seeking with the data that they're wanting. Really reminds me of a lot of the work of Edgar Schein, who just passed away earlier, you know, I think it was a week ago.
Yeah.
And I think about his book Helping, and he talks about how to really help somebody, you have to ask questions, you have to be inquisitive, and you have to listen. And I'm trying to, I need to go back and reread it, because he gives one example about somebody asking for directions. And if you just told them, you know, that, you know, if they say, how do you get to, you know, Boston General Hospital, you could give them directions. But if you talked a little bit more, you might find that they're looking for something really close by, and they think that that's the hospital they need to get to. And there may be something right around the block. Mm-hmm. And so that idea of inquiry, finding out more of what it is that they're really asking help for. And I think that just kind of reminds me of kind of how you approach the people analytics part of, you know, somebody saying, I want these numbers, and being able to find out, okay, tell me what it is that you're, you know, what those numbers are going to help you do. And by that line of inquiry, you can be more effective with your analytics skills.
Yeah. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's decision making. And we talked a little bit about this before the podcast, in regards to, you know, personal relationships, marriage, you know, what are some of the things that, you know, influenced, you know, when you got married, you know, decision making. I mean, just the decision science is very fascinating, because I mean, there's people that really are analytical when it comes to decision making, and there are other people that are more highly intuitive, and decision making is based off of experience, and both approaches can have its strengths and weaknesses. And I mean, when you're working with stakeholders, it's kind of understanding that, you know, what language do they speak? How do you come to a decision? So.
Yeah. I think you bring a really cool mindset to what a lot of people would think would be a very technical, you know, somebody with a stats background would be drawn to. And I think that you bring a great perspective to that. So I can see where you're a great asset for your organization.
The stats help. Like I said, I've met people in this field that have come from all sorts of different disciplines. A lot of the folks that are on my current team didn't come from a traditional HR background. They came over from finance. So I've met people that came into this with a finance background. I've met people that came from like an IT computer science background. But people analytics is kind of a team sport. I mean, not only does it require back and forth conversation with the business, and it also requires an understanding of data structure. And you don't need to be or come from a traditional IT background to appreciate all the pieces and moving pieces and puzzle of the puzzle that, you know, contributes to how decision making gets made. And like I said, what really helps is coming into it with curiosity. You might not necessarily need, have a very strong coding background, but at the end of the day, you're still using information to tell stories. And so I think people analytics has a huge demand, not only for people that come from traditional technical backgrounds or heavy stats, but it also requires people that can translate the technical to build a business case. Because I mean, there's a huge difference between, you know, analytics in an academic setting versus a professional setting, you know, or I say professional, a business setting. So being able to translate, I mean, those are your glue people that can help bridge the technical and the business side of things. So.
Yeah. It reminds me of the cartoon I saw a long time ago where the guy was climbing the mountain in, it was like in the like at Mount Everest area, and he gets up and there's the guru sitting up there meditating at the top of the mountain. And he asks him, what's the meaning of life? I was told you knew the answer to the meaning of life. And he says 34.9.
Was that Monty Python?
I don't remember. I just, okay.
That's like something that a Monty Python.
Where does that number come from? Like, what's that number really mean? And so, yeah, it just reminds me of like when you talked about that, about the business analytics, like you can throw out a number, but it's like, what's the context? What's it mean? Where did it come from? You know,
it's storytelling. You know, how do you tell a story either, you know, digitally or, you know, through analytics or just, like I said, engaging in conversation to have an understanding of what whatever business problem is that you're trying to solve or trying to address.
So your next business case, you need to work in some Monty Python content. So.
When I worked for NORC, one of our directors was a huge, she's from Australia, Katie, she was a huge Monty Python fan.
Yeah, it's you either love it or you hate it.
Yeah. Yep. My wife's definitely not a fan. So it's my guilty pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine can tolerate it, but I she was turned off to it because her older brothers who tormented her were big into it. And so
they
turned her away from it.
Gotcha.
But well, Tony, this has been fun catching up. It's always great when I see one of my former students just thriving. And so despite my classes, you're doing well. And so,
At least that's what it looks like on the surface. You know, I'm honored that you've invited me to speak on the show and and just kind of share my journey and also, you know, reconnect with you and catch up with you.
Yeah. The benefits of LinkedIn and technology. So I appreciate you taking time out of your work day. And so, yeah, when you work from home, when you work virtually, it's kind of like, it's hard to not know when you're not at work.
That is one of the biggest issues. I mean, people are, you know, you got some people that are worried that, you know, working remotely, you're not doing enough work or you're slacking off at home. But the boundaries, you don't have the boundaries that you do when you're going into an office. And when you step outside of those doors, now it's my time. When you're working from home, it's, you know, I could be playing with the kids and then see an email and be tempted to answer or respond. And
not when to turn it off. So,
yeah. But it also depends on, you know, what, you know, if you do what you love, then, you know, it doesn't feel like work. So.
Yep. That's a great point. Well, Tony, stay safe. And I'll give you a shout when the episode is going to go live.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You bet. Have a great one.
All right. Take care.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Chatting About Change with Dr. Jim Maddox. If you want to connect more, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and at my website, drjimmaddox.com. Thanks for listening.